Welcome to another episode of the What's Good Games podcast, your source for video game news, commentary, analysis, and funny stuff every Friday. I'm Andrea Renee, joined by the blonde nerd, Miss Brittany Brombacher.
Hello, Gov.
And Christine Steimer is here.
Hello.
Welcome back, ladies, to the United States. It's good to be back.
It is very good to be back. I am going to text my husband because one of the fine folks that we met in London got me a book about British slang. And my new goal in life is to say something every podcast, but I don't have the book.
Oh, poor planning. I'm glad that you have your phone so you can text him he can bring you the book. This is a necessary thing. Yeah, so we learned a lot of slang from our friends across the pond over in London town. We're going to be talking all about our trip to the UK in the third segment of the show today. But a huge thank you to everybody who came out to the meet and greet at the Marquee of Westminster. We had a fantastic time chatting with all of you. And like I mentioned, we'll recap everything we did while we were over there a little bit later on in the show. But we've got a lot of stuff to talk about because E3 is upon us. So we've got a lot of E3 plans to go over. But before I get to that, I want to remind you guys, it's Pride Month. Happy Pride, everybody. As a nod to our friends of the LGBTQ community, we are doing a special promotion in our merch store. If you go to whatsgoodgames.com/store, you'll see a couple of different Pride designs. And I've just added a third design, which I actually really like. I'm going to have to order for myself. All of the profits for the months of May and June from these Pride designs will go to GLAAD, the Gay and Lesbians Alliance Against Defamation. We really love what GLAAD is doing in the entertainment space, in video games in particular, and think that their advocacy is super important. So if you guys are interested in helping support the mission for GLAAD, or if you just want to get one of our sweet Pride shirts, head on over to whatsgoodgames.com/store. Also, as a reminder, we had this little thing called whatsgoodgames.com/dearWGG. This used to be locked behind a Patreon tier, but we have since made it open and available for everybody.
We
decided it'd be better to have one central place for you guys to send your questions to us instead of tweeting and Facebook and email. That you, of course, you're still welcome to reach out to us those ways, but this way it'll help us go to one centralized location every week for the show. So we are going to be taking your questions during E3 on the GameSpot something station, and I always forget the name of this. Base Station. Thank you, Brittany.
Got you.
We announced this week that, yes, we are once again teaming up with GameSpot to do some awesome content at E3 Thursday from 4 to 5 p.m. Pacific time. You'll be able to come on down to LA Live and watch us record What's Good Games live on site outside of E3. You do not need an E3 badge in order to attend the live recording of our show from 4 to 5. And then we're going to be doing a little meet and greet from 5 to 5:30. And if you guys are planning to stay or to come on down for Kind of Funny, they are immediately after us. So hopefully you guys can come down and go to both. It'll be a nice little Thursday evening in Los Angeles. But don't worry if you don't have plans to go down to LA Live next Thursday. It will, of course, be uploaded across all of our podcast platforms and at youtube.com/whatsgoodgames for you to take a look at next Friday. Then when we come back the following week, that'll be our big E3 deep dive episode, because we just don't have enough time to record a proper E3 episode on site because of all the other obligations we've got going on next week. But we hope to see you at the GameSpot meet and greet. We're really excited about that. Again, the GameSpot base station. If you guys want to get those details, you can check out What's Good underscore Games on Twitter or any of our individual Twitter accounts. We'll be posting those details periodically throughout the week. But that's just the beginning, you guys. I should say that's just the end, because that's the final thing of the week. I'm actually going to be doing some stuff, and Brittany's going to be joining me at the EA Building Healthy Community Summit. So that was just announced this week as well. We're going to be speaking about how to help build a healthy community, since obviously What's Good Games is the best community out there.
It's true.
And we know just a few things about combating online toxicity, wouldn't you say, ladies?
Yeah. Just a couple.
The Banhammer is one things. Of them.
We don't have any confirmation on if that's going to be available to watch anywhere. I don't believe it will be, but we'll report back next week or the week after. Don't you worry. And then Saturday, EA Play kicks off. I'm hosting the Star Wars Jedi Fallen Order gameplay reveal with one Greg Miller. And then I'm also hosting some new announcements for The Sims, which I can't talk about yet, a little bit later on in the day. That's going to be super fun as well. Plus, once we get into the actual E3 proper, I'm going to be hosting on the Facebook Gaming live stage periodically throughout the week. So you should keep an eye on my Twitter account as to which times I'll be at fb.gg on stage doing some cool developer interviews. They're doing more of a focus on content creators this year, since they have this amazing robots community of people who stream on fb.gg. And so I'm only going to be on stage a couple of times, and the three of us will not be appearing there this year, but we will be appearing all together at the GameSpot base station. Ooh. And we'll also be hopefully streaming from EA Play Saturday afternoon. We're still locking up those details. So again, the best bet for you guys, if you haven't already, is to follow What's Good underscore Games, because all of the details will be there. And then, of course, we'll be tweeting them as well.
So. Yeah, pretty typical of E3 week. Everything comes together last minute.
Yes, it's very true. It super does. But it's going to be an exciting year. I'm pumped.
I'm so excited. I'm always excited for E3. But this year, something about it, I'm even more excited than usual. It could be because of some of the games I know I'm going to be able to check out. But oh my God, it's going to be great. It's going to be real fun. And I was a good girl.
Aww, yeah.
I didn't book back-to-back-to-back-to-back appointments like I normally do.
Smart. Good for you.
I know. I'm very proud of myself. I did it.
You did it.
You did it. I have a suspicion that once we get there, though, you'll be like, ooh, I didn't know this game was here or that game was there. And then magically, your schedule will fill up again.
Absolutely. No, I'm seeing about 3 or 4 games a day. I mean, that's a good amount.
That's a good amount. Yeah. That's a nice calm amount.
Calm.
We're seeing some of those games together, which is very exciting.
Yeah.
But enough about E3. Let's move on and get to our first segment. I'd like to thank our Patreon producers for the month of June, Lincoln Davis, Alex Rogopoulos, Ferris Ate, and Mohammed Mohammed. And welcome to our Patreon community, Drew Quesada, Scott Lamond, Greg Shirvastity. I think I maybe really butchered your name, Greg. I'm sorry about that. Fala, Jamie Domer, Excess Oddities, Lena Mueller. It's got the double dots over the U.
Oh, it does?
I don't remember how to pronounce that. I'm sorry, Lena.
Mueller.
Christian Rodriguez, Robert Craig Nielsen, Stephen Amaral, Scott Edwards, Christopher Spink, and Jason Finelli.
Hey.
Welcome, everybody. I'm glad that you're on board. And before we get to the news, I'd like to say this episode of What's Good Games is brought to you by Fleur. Even if you spritz on perfume every day, here's something you might not think about: what's actually in it. That's why we're so excited about Fleur. They make stunning, non-toxic perfumes and list all of their ingredients online. You get a good scent made with clean ingredients, and the sample process is just plain fun. For luxurious perfume that's all about good, clean, fun, try Fleur, Phlur. First, you're going to get to know each of Fleur's scents with pictures and words and even playlists on their site. Then you actually try them on your own skin and see how it works for your life. Fleur's world-class perfumers are scent artists, and these perfumes are their masterworks. Another cool thing, every Fleur scent is gender-free. But the best part is Fleur is a completely transparent fragrance company. They tell you every ingredient in their perfumes and why it's there. And the good news, they just introduced body wash and body lotion in the same sense, so you can smell amazing like Stimer all the time.
Yes, smell like me.
Yes, Without fail, we say this every time we talk about Fleur, is that every time we see Steimer, when we pick her up from the airport, we're like, Steimer, you smell so good. And then we just kind of like awkwardly sniff her for a few minutes.
I've been held a little bit longer than I sometimes care to be.
Not by us, though.
That was the joke. But no, yeah. For you guys, you can hold me as long as you want.
Thanks. Just take a few hits off.
Thanks. Gotta get that hit of that Sienna scent that Steimer loves so much. If you guys want to smell as good as Steimer, you got to go to Fleur.com today and use promo code WHATSGOOD to get 20% off your first custom Fleur sample set. You get to pick 3 scents to try, and you get a credit towards a full-size bottle of your favorite one. That's promo code WHATSGOOD at PHLUR.com to get your first 3 Fleur fragrance samples at 20% off. PHLUR.com. Promo code WHATSGOOD. All right, time for the news. So the first story is technically not really a story, but it's part of what Britt and I are doing at the Building Healthy Community Summit, so I wanted to drop it in there. Britt, you want to read this one?
I would love nothing more. Let me scroll. Here we go. EA donates $1 million to fight against online toxicity. Be a variety. Electronic Arts is kicking off its 4th annual Play to Give campaign with a $1 million contribution to 3 not-for-profit organizations fighting for inclusion in games and against online bullying. Players can participate by contributing to the United Nations He for She campaign, Pacers National Bullying Prevention Center, and Ditch the Label. The Play to Give campaign runs until the end of the week on June 9th. This week, EA will also host its first Building Healthy Community Summit to discuss online toxicity and methods of building positive community environments. The summit takes place in Hollywood, California on June 7th and will feature speakers including Ditch the Label CEO Liam Hackett, What's Good Games nerds Andrea Renee, and the amazing, wonderful Brittany Brombacher, as well as members of EA Studios and community program team and various influencers from the gaming community. It was really weird just to read my name now. As we
Nerds, for the record.
As we create games for hundreds of millions of players around the world, it's very important to us that players feel like they can engage and enjoy the experience without fear or threats or harassment, said Chris Bruzzo, Chief Marketing Officer at EA. With the help of our Play to Give partners, we're working to create safe and inclusive spaces where everyone can play. This year, we're also hosting the first Healthy Community Summit to bring together influencers and leaders across the gaming community to fight toxicity in games.
Yeah, it's going to be great.
Yeah, this is good. This is a great thing. And this isn't something that I think only EA can benefit from, obviously. There are a lot of games out there and toxic communities related to said games. And it's really cool that someone's stepping up and being like, hey, we want to get top execs involved and we want to have a conversation about what we can do. I think for us, and this is something I've learned, is being on the side of community building, you feel like it's very obvious, like what it takes to run a community and what it takes to build something healthy. But clearly, you know, it's not as easy, or it's not like common knowledge necessarily for everyone, especially if you're on a different side of the industry. So I think it's great that they want to pick our brains and chat with us about it. And I think a lot of people can benefit from this.
I think it's funny to me. It's not funny, but I'm like, this makes sense for EA because they are by far the most vehemently hated group of games, I would say. Like, they probably rival Activision. They probably go back and forth, but EA takes a lot of flack. So, kind of makes sense.
No, they do. And the irony of it is that EA actually has a lot of programs like this that are instituted across their many offices around the world, even though they have been voted, you know, like most hated game company or whatever that title was.
It's like worst company of something.
Right, years in a row, right?
Yeah.
But if you talk to people who work at EA, like none of them feel that way, at least the ones that I've talked to. In the time that I've worked with EA, obviously I can't blanket statement every employee that's ever worked at EA. That's literally thousands upon thousands of people. But the thing that I love about why they asked us to be involved is because we obviously represent a community that has to fight online toxicity on a consistent basis. And I think, as Britt said, it may seem obvious at face value what you have to do to build a community, but there's a lot of creators out there and game makers on both sides that aren't willing to make the hard choices in order to make inclusivity happen. Being inclusive just doesn't exist on its own. You have to work for it. You have to push for it and strive for it and make sure that your community is open to it. Because by nature, I think people, you know, are part of our herd culture as humans, and being part of like that species is like we want to stick together in our groups and our cliques. And we are afraid sometimes of things that we don't know about or people that we don't know about. And so if you encourage people to explore other cultures, other religions, you know, other ways of living, people who have alternate genders, right? If you open and foster a community where people can discuss that stuff without the fear that they're going to be judged for how they live their life, I think that that is a really safe and positive place. And I think what goes hand in hand with allowing people to be who they are openly is also combating bullying on its face every time and not letting anything slide. And that's something that we've been really diligent about, you know, here in What's Good Games is like, listen, there's no place for people to be jerks in our community. And I think that's something that a lot of other creators struggle with is because they get to this point where they're like, well, I don't want to block this person because then I'll lose them as a subscriber. I'm like, we would rather have them gone from our subscriptions than have them being in our community being an asshole.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Like you have a garden full of beautiful flowers and then you get that asshat weed that pops up. And at first it's just one asshat weed, but then the asshat weed multiplies into more asshat weeds. It calls its friends over and it's like, hey, this beautiful garden tolerates these asshat weeds. And before you know it, you got a garden of asshat weeds. You got to nip it in the ass.
Yeah. I believe in the bud for your analogy to continue.
I missed it.
But yes.
Thank you, Simer.
But anyway, we're excited about that. We'll report back on how it goes. Next up.
Also, I just want to real quick make a little disclaimer that we are missing the Pokemon Direct, so we will not be talking about it during this new segment.
Correct. So we are also missing Stadia, which is we could probably just mention that now if you want to.
Sure.
Wait, what?
There's Stadia. There's Destiny 2 shenanigans. THQ is released, announcing 3 new games between like now and Friday. Or tomorrow and Friday. I don't even know what's happening. It's E3 week. E3 pre-week.
I was just going to say we missed the last Pokemon one as well, where they announced Pokemon Sleep because we were all in London.
Oh, yeah.
Did we miss it, though?
Technically. Hey, like I said, I tweeted about Pokemon Sleep and then 20 minutes later was finally able to fall asleep. So
that's
it's doing
secret.
Something. It's some sort of weird magical app.
Your
Snorlax powers came to me through the phone. And he put me to sleep.
Oh, my God.
So speaking of which, I'll just cut right to that Google Stadia piece then, since we're talking about things that we've missed. So we're recording this early. If you're part of our Patreon community, you might have seen my vlog, which is up at patreon.com/whatsgoodgames. If you guys are interested, where I talk about how I have to leave early to go down for rehearsals for EA Play. And that means that we missed the Pokemon news and that we missed the Google Stadia news, which I'm kind of bummed about because I'm really looking forward to this. So Google Stadia's price, their launch info is going to be announced at Stadia Connect this week. So by the time you're listening to this, all of that has already been unveiled. So we don't really want to spend a bunch of time hypothesizing about what the pricing is going to be, when it's going to launch, because it's all going to be moot by the time you guys listen to this. But know that we'll obviously comment on it on the next show when we're all together post E3, and we'll dissect all of the announcements and everything they make. Yeah.
And I think about the pigs I dissected in middle school whenever I hear that word, and it's not a good memory.
What, you don't like bacon?
I love bacon.
Pigs? Frogs.
We did
both
baby pigs, and it's the chemicals that they use to preserve them that it just makes me so
formaldehyde,
sick.
Formaldehyde, yeah.
Oh, God, so bad. Anyway, that was random.
All right, so Watch Dogs Legion has leaked. It's set in a post-Brexit London, and it lets you play as any NPC. So this write-up comes from Polygon, and it says, now official. Did you write that in? Who wrote that?
They tweeted out something.
A teaser.
Yeah, they didn't confirm any of this information, but they did acknowledge that the game is called what it's called.
Watch Dogs Legion?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So can you pull up that tweet for me while I read this write-up from Polygon? Watch Dogs Legions will be the third entry into the Ubisoft open world franchise built around hacker culture, according to a listing on Amazon UK. The posting was first spotted by thenerdmag.com. The product's description says the game will be set in a post-Brexit world in which society, politics, and technology have changed and altered London's fortunes. The listing states that players will be able to play as any character in the game's open world. Quote, every individual you meet in the open world has a full set of animations, voiceover, character traits, and visuals that are generated and guided by gameplay systems. The product description notes London has one of the highest surveillance levels in the world, making this the perfect playground. Though there is no official count of how many security cameras are in the UK, the number has been estimated to be in the millions. Kotaku reporter Jason Schreier confirms that he's heard about the game's location and features. In fact, he writes, from what I've heard, this system is so ambitious that it's been causing the developers a lot of headaches and may have led to at least one delay. On the video game forum, Reset Error, senior analyst at Nico Partners, Daniel Ahmad, also claims to have heard the same title and description ahead of the leak.
Oh, boy.
I had no idea that we were under that much surveillance when we were all in London.
No shit.
Yep.
Everybody was watching us. Andrea, the footage of us, like, in the alley, I mean, we better make sure that doesn't leak.
Oh.
I don't know what you're talking about, Steimer.
Oh, goodness. So if you go to Watch Dogs Game Twitter account, it was fairly active until late 2018, but now they've tweeted, as of 2 hours ago, God save the NPCs, reveal at E3, hashtag Watch Dogs Legion, hashtag UBE3, and then in their bio it says see you at E3. So.
Okay, so they confirmed Watch Dogs Legion.
Yep.
And the UK part then.
The NPC part obviously makes it sound like that part is true as well.
Yeah.
God save the NPC. You'd be hopping around a bunch of NPCs, which is crazy. And I love how they're like, this is, you know, ambitious. It's been causing developers a lot of headaches. I'm like, yeah, no shit. That sounds fucking complicated.
Sounds really complicated. I'm curious, how expansive is this system going to be? Is it you're just like walking around and you see an NPC and you're like, I'm going to take over your body and soul. And then you can just like walk around and experience them. You know, like why would you want to do that? I'm sure it has something to do with the mission structures and whatnot.
Yeah, but it might be like puzzle solving or whatever. Like, oh, I need to be this person in order to get into this area. I don't know. I have no idea.
Maybe
I was always. Yeah. I was always pretty impressed by the level of detail in the two first Watch Dogs games when you would hack people's phones. You know, you could look at descriptive information about who they are, kind of like personality traits, what they do, their job, things like that. And they wrote a lot of detail across so many NPCs in the world. And now it appears like they're taking it one step further in a really ambitious move to be able to allow you to kind of hot swap between these people. Giving them individual VO, I think, is a super ambitious thing. And full set of animations and character traits had me a little worried. So I talked about this on KFGD a little bit, but I think doing something that ambitious is good. I think we need to be pushing the boundaries of what gameplay can do, particularly at the end of the console lifecycle where we're at right now. Or potentially, if this is, you know, like a launch title for next gen, looking at what, you know, these new processors can handle. However, I had mentioned one of my concerns that as much as I love Ubisoft open world games, they don't really have the best history of doing human facial animations in their open world characters. In fact, they've had several instances where it's gone terribly wrong. So it makes me just a little concerned that they're doing something this ambitious with human characters. So I'm like, I don't know, guys.
I mean, it might be more because it doesn't say that each one has a unique set of these things. It's like unique, like handcrafted unique. It kind of sounds like a little Sims-ish in some certain ways, where it's like, okay, this character is XYZ.
Every individual you meet in the open
has
world
has a full set of animations. That doesn't mean it's a unique set of animations. It just means it has a full set of animations.
My guess is that it's going to be recycled, you know, voiceovers, maybe like one out of every 10 characters. I mean, I don't know, but that's the way I imagine it would go, is if like 10 different voices and each NPC is randomly assigned a voice and you'll get that person. And, you know, yeah, if their facial animations are mapped to cover all of the NPCs, I mean, we don't know any of this is true, but I could see that getting a little wonky, a little.
Oh yeah. There'll be some fun jank in this game for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, it just makes me concerned that if they do go that route where they are reusing assets, then is it going to be weird when you're playing this open world game and you're in like hour 20, hour 40, hour 60, and you've re-seen or reheard these same NPCs over and over and over again?
Well, we still don't even, I mean, I personally still didn't even understand the draw, like Brittany said, of why, what the point of switching is. There's obviously got to be some sort of gameplay mechanic tied to that a little bit stronger than before, because before you were just hacking people. You didn't really need to be them. So I'm just curious to see what this is all about.
Yeah.
Yeah, the name to me suggests that you're going to be recruiting people to the DedSec cause, right? Like Watch Dogs Legion. It's like recruiting people. We're going to form an army. We're going to form,
I am Legion. Know,
like a clan or something, right?
I mean,
yeah.
I
know. Yeah. I imagine, you know, like I said, it would have something to do with the missions. Maybe, you know, you have to, can, you know, are you hacking the human or are you like you said, recruiting them? I guess that's kind of, I guess these aren't robots. You can't really hack humans. Never mind. I mean, maybe you can. I don't know. I don't know how far science has taken us in the year 2018. But
I guess it depends on if they have implants or not. It was interesting. I just watched this whole piece on Last Week Tonight about how many people have devices implanted in their body. And It's a surprising amount, apparently. Like 1 in 10.
Wait, really? Oh.
Yeah.
Like magnets and shit?
In the United States, not worldwide. But
that's interesting.
Because it was the whole point of the story that they were doing was about the difference between medical devices that are FDA approved and FDA cleared, and how there's all of these FDA cleared implantable devices that actually never go through human trials and never get tested or checked that they're approved via this weird loophole, and that all of these people have died.
Oh,
and
fuck.
But like they made this joke about how like we all have like computer robot parts installed in us. And I was like, wow, I didn't think about it that way. But
we'd all set off the X-ray machines.
It's true.
Or would we?
It's all conspiracy. Yeah. They're all letting us think we don't have robot parts in us by letting us go through the scanners.
Oh, yeah. My God.
TSA's in on it.
Wow. I kind of like where you're going with this, though.
We're all a little frazzled, can you tell?
Oh, my God, yeah. I've had some real special moments the past 2 days.
Well, we all will become clear about Watch Dogs Legion
at
E3 on Monday at the press conference. We will be there. And I have to imagine we're going to get some hands-on time with this at E3 as well. I'm going to keep my fingers crossed that we get to test it out and see what's going down. All right, what's next story. On? And Steimer, I'll have you read the one after this because I'm going to take this Destiny story.
I mean, I assume.
The next Destiny 2 expansion is Shadowkeep, and it's set on the moon. So this write-up comes from Polygon. With the Destiny 2 Season of Opulence data, players have data-mined the announcement art for an upcoming Destiny 2 expansion, Shadowkeep. You would think that people would learn by now that your shit's going to get data mined if you release it.
Yeah, you should probably know better.
The image data mined from the new patch is likely for an in-game announcement prompting players to pre-order. The announcement refers to Shadowkeep as the next chapter in Destiny's experience. By the time you listen to this podcast, this is another announcement that will have already happened. This comes ahead of Bungie's planned announcement for Destiny's next chapter, of course, which is scheduled for Thursday, June 6th. Today is Friday, June 7th, so you've already watched it if you're a Destiny fan. The image claims that players will return to the Earth's moon to take on terrifying shadows, and players will descend into a mysterious enemy citadel and become a slayer of nightmares.
Ooh.
Now, this part, Polygon, I don't know if I necessarily agree with. The moon was a fan favorite location in the original Destiny, where players first encountered the Hive Race. The key art for the expansion depicts a giant fortress on the moon, with the Earth and the Traveler hovering in the background. The data mine also reveals the Shadowkeep will have a collector's edition. Destiny's smaller Year 3 expansion, Rise of Iron, didn't offer a collector's edition. It's probably for the best. The inclusion of one of Shadowkeep could mean it's a full-fledged expansion like the Taken King and Forsaken. Bungie will likely reveal more details during their stream.
Oh, Bobby. Shit. Duh. Yeah, also, the only thing I remember about the moon was that wizard came from the moon.
Oh, yes. Dinklebot.
Yes.
I've got Dinklebot. My Dinklebot back there. Still got Peter Dinklage's voice in it.
Now it's Nolanbot.
Yeah, now it is Nolanbot. It's true. They never made a Nolanbot version. They've only
or would
ever
it
made
be Northbot? Because he'd be using his last name.
Oh, I like Northbot. Northbot sounds better.
Cute. Yeah. He is also like just a way better ghost VO actor. Dinkle was fine. Dinklage, that's his name.
Yes.
Peter Dinklage.
Dinkle.
I don't know why I said that.
Because did we call him Dinkleblock? Because they don't say his full name with it. They shorten.
Dinkle.
Dinkle. I'm sorry, Peter. You are a fantastic actor.
He is not listening to this podcast. I do not think he'll take offense.
Okay. So, Shadowkeep. I...
Are you going to be so hyped for this, Andrea? Are you getting the collector's edition?
Don't mince words, baby girl.
Listen, here's the constant conundrum of Andrea Renee Destiny fan. I'm definitely getting the collector's edition. I definitely don't like that it's on the moon.
I love this. I love Andrea Renee Destiny.
That should just be your new title at life.
Yes, it should.
I just don't understand why we have to go back to, we keep going back to places that we've already been. I mean, I do really appreciate that in Forsaken, they introduced the Dreaming City and we had all of these new destinations and we got these new raids and it was all real cool. And they brought in, you know, Gambit and blah, blah, blah. They did a lot in Forsaken that I was really happy with. I guess from a specific standpoint, I understand why they want to reuse some assets and maybe update them a bit and add some new areas. But, and there was certainly a lot on the moon that was left unexplored and certain areas that you could never go to, but you could see like in the sky boxes and stuff in the distance. And so that's kind of neat. Do I like the Hive? No.
Nobody likes the Hive. Whoa, that got really, that was really loud in my own ears.
You were very passionate.
So, and like, I hear Slayer of Nightmares. I mean, that also to me makes me think of the Taken. So if it's like Hive and the Taken, like, or if it's worse, the Taken Hive, which are the most terrible. I hate those knights so much. I think that this will be fine. Like, honestly, it's going to be interesting to see what Bungie does in a post-Activision world. This is going to be their first major expansion that they're publishing on their own without Activision. So I'm going to be interested to see how it's going to go for them and what, if anything, they're going to do differently than what we've seen them do in previous expansions. So I'm excited to jump into Season of Opulence when E3 is over. I'm kind of bummed that I can't jump in now. I knew that the raid was never going to be an option for me. I still haven't done the last raid. But I do like that they have power bounties so you can kind of surge your way up and catch up with people. And I'm definitely going to jump in with the What's Good Guardians once the dust has settled. But yeah, I guess I'll be watching the stream along with everybody else this week and seeing how I feel about it.
I'm excited about the saga of Andrea Renee Destiny player and Destiny to continue. It's like a love hate thing. I know you don't hate it. It's a love frustration thing. So yeah. It's like, I got that scale of a 1 to 10. How much are you in love with Destiny right now? Last time, I think it was like a 7 or an 8. So we'll see how you're doing after the stream.
It varies quite wildly. Sometimes I'm like all in on Destiny and I'm like, oh my God, this is the best. And then other times I'm like, oh my God, I fucking hate this so much. Make it go away. I feel like that's most Destiny players, though. Yeah. At least the ones that I talk to.
That sounds correct.
It's never like I'm always loving it or always hating it. I guess people that always hate it don't play. So there you go.
There you go. Logic.
All right. So another thing we'll catch up with you guys on next time we are back post E3. All right, Stimer.
Yeah.
You're up.
This is sort of a weird story.
It's sort of a weird game.
The reason I put this story in is because we didn't get a chance to talk about that crazy
Well, we were out popping up off. Wait, what? Popping up off?
I didn't mean popping that. What? What's that?
It was me stumbling over my words. It's not really a. I meant to say popping about in London.
I'm googling this.
Popping about. Cheerio. Oh yes.
Death Stranding released some stiff. So this is a sort of a weird non-story, but the end gets story-ish. So.
Strap in.
Stay with me. Kojima outlines key Death Stranding milestones. This comes to us via Eurogamer. Death Stranding developer Hideo Kojima has revealed the milestones he considers key to bringing both his studio, Kojima Productions, and his ambitious, mysterious game to life. Quote, in January 2016, Death Stranding only existed in my brain. Now it became too real and was able to announce the day thanks to everyone at Guerrilla Games. And then this quote gets cut off, so I don't actually know what he says after that. But something profound. And then he posted a series of tweets that documented The notable milestones of his career since leaving Konami, confirming, amongst other things, that the scans and capture of stars Norman Reedus and Mads Mikkelsen were already done and dusted by the first half of 2016. And KJP, Kojima Productions, didn't select the engine it was going to use to develop the game until autumn/Q3 of 2016, less than 3 years ago. Kojima also shared a number of candid photos from the events specified, including some of Reedus, Mikkelsen, and co-star Guillermo del Toro. Kojima recently confirmed Death Stranding will release later this year, November 8th to be precise, along with a lengthy new trailer that shows a meaningful chunk of gameplay. And as an aside, a lot of confusing terms. The video also gives us a sneak peek at the kinds of things you'll get up to in the game, including stealth, vehicles, exploration, and the highlight of the teaser for many, a super cool ladder.
I mean, that was a cool ladder. I paused the video during that to watch that ladder in action and like actually look at it.
And you were like, oh my God, zoom in. Enhance!
Enhance!
So this was a really interesting slash...
Didn't we watch this together, Andrea?
We didn't watch the whole thing together. We tuned into the very end of the live stream. This 9-minute video with some gameplay and a lot of like... A lot of weird shit, man.
Yeah.
Weird.
Definitely a bizarre game. And like some of the things Kojima has said after is like this game is about connecting with other members of the human race. And like we are all divided and humans are not meant to be divided. We are meant to be a pack. So like, all right, cool.
Yeah. I watched it and I feel like I watched a trailer for like 10 different games. Like, what is this thing, like, all thrown together? There are, like, zombies. There are babies that apparently connect you to the other side of something. There are weird, what I call BT things with that little, like,
claw things. Oh, I hate those things. Those things are creepy.
Yeah, I have no idea what's happening. But I will say, I need to play this game yesterday. I am so excited for this. It's so weird. And I almost don't want to know anything else about it. I mean... Granted, I know nothing about it right now, actually.
I was like, what do you know about this game besides the actors in it?
I know absolutely nothing, but it's so weird. And because it is a Kojima game, I feel, and this could be a bold statement, that this could very well be one of those definitive games that is abstract art. And it's, you know what I mean? Because it's so odd that depending on how this is pulled off and how it's executed, it could just be like one of those games for the books where you're like... Whoa, this was really weird.
That happened.
Going with an open mind, you're going to get an awesome experience. But obviously, if you're looking for something streamlined and something that makes sense, that you're probably so turned off by this game right now. But I need to play it. I have to get my hands on this. I need to know what's happening. And all the gameplay we've seen so far has just been Norman Reedus walking around on mountains and cliffs and shit. But
yeah, that's the part that confuses me the most. Where I'm like, well, am I just walking around,
he was shooting ladder simulator, Chutes and Ladders, featuring Norman Reedus.
Oh my God, Chutes and Ladders would be amazing with Norman.
Yeah,
Reedus.
Now we see him shooting something, and then we see him dodging enemies and getting into melee combat. But I mean, that
I don't want to melee combat people. Am I how do I have the baby?
You want to send the baby?
Let baby go in, do my recon missions for me in your weird hybrid suit thing. What if
the
he was
baby
like
creeps
praying?
Me out. I don't think I can... I don't know if I'm going to be able to make it through this game because the baby creeps me out a lot.
Oh, the baby's super creaky.
Oh, yeah.
Creepy. But his name is Krang, right? Or is it... Well, the guy from Ninja Turtles, the brain.
Yeah, it's Krang.
Yeah. I want that. I want that suit and I want that baby in it. And then I will 100% down to play this game. I think that would be fucking awesome.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
That would be... Honestly, I would not put it past this game if that happens at some point.
I'm waiting for it. I think that's going to be the twist. Baby going to get out there, fuck some shit up in his big old Hulk man costume, robot suit, whatever you want to call it.
Dude, that can be a cosplay for you, Stammer.
I mean, sure.
You can get a little baby, put it in a little
Am
jar.
Am I the baby?
Oh, you could be. I mean, sure. I can fit you in a little jar and I can wear the costume. And I can
strap you. Oh my God, that would be hilarious if you walked around with Stimer in like this jar on your back. Oh, I don't know how we would logistically make this thing happen, but just the idea of it, I feel like this needs to be something somebody draws and sends to us.
That would be fantastic.
Oh my God, so good.
But yeah, I don't know if I'm excited for this game, but I am definitely
intrigued,
fascinated by this game. And like, I do need to play it at least for a bit to figure out what it is.
Yeah. It's a head scratcher for me. I appreciate that there's people out there that are, you know, diehard Kojima fans that are like, OMG, I can't wait for this. But I just am from the sidelines going, like, what the heck is this game? Yeah. I don't understand. Like you, I'm going to, you know, probably give it a go later this year and see what it's all about. But I'm skeptical.
Yeah, I think a lot of
about
people
what
are.
This game is. Yeah,
rightfully so. So then it gets interesting because Jason Schreier, the knower of all, said, okay, before the official release date was announced, he was tweeting, I think he said something along the lines of, it sounds like Death Stranding is going to get its release date. It's going to be sooner rather than later, whatever, whatever. And then it releases. And then he said in the same tweet that Tealoo 2 appears to have been pushed back to 2020. And then I was like, okay, so we get Death Stranding this year from Sony, like the main exclusive. What about the other ones? And so someone tweeted to Jason Schreier and they said, so we could possibly be getting at least Cyberpunk, Tealoo 2, Ghost of Tsushima, the G.R.R. Martin from Software game, 1 to 2 Ubisoft AAA games, and Final Fantasy VII Remake Part 1 in the first half of next year. And Jason Schreier responded with, based on what I've heard, yes to all of those, 2020 is gonna be wild. Not super related to Death Stranding, but still interesting. Like, no, yeah. Not super, but yeah, because he kind of like turned into this little like thread about like upcoming game releases, and I thought that was interesting.
Well, you know, yeah. As game dev goes, everything changes all of the time.
It's true.
Ain't that the truth?
Oh,
all right.
Boy.
Well, listen, that's going to wrap up our news segment. As we mentioned, we are missing some key pieces of news this week since we have to record early due to my rehearsal schedules. Apologies, fam. We will, of course, recap as much as we can when we get back. But stick with us because we're just going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we've got lots of games to talk about, including some recently unembargoed, I don't know if that's a phrase, stuff that I played at Judges Week that I can talk about now. So you'll want to hear about it. We'll be right back.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to segment 2 of the What's Good Games podcast. This is the part of the show where we tell you what we've been playing. But before we do that, I want to talk to you a little bit about a brand that I love, Stitch Fix. Andrea, describe your look in one word.
Awesome?
Yes. Is it?
I don't know. Probably not.
No, I think it is. It could be casual, sophisticated, or playful. However you dress, Stitch Fix has the expert personal stylist that can help you look your best. Personal style is like a fingerprint. Everyone has their own. It could be awesome if you're like Andrea. Whatever your style, the expert stylists at Stitch Fix are ready to help you express yourself. Not all clothes are a fit for all men or women. And with Stitch Fix, your personal stylist will send you clothing that makes you look your best. Less one size fits all, more this fits your style. Stitch Fix is an online personal styling service that delivers your favorite clothing brands right to your door. To get started, go to stitchfix.com/whatsgood, answer some questions about your preferred style, and your personal shopper will ship you a box of clothes, shoes, and accessories. I got my most recent Stitch Fix box in, and I got a super cute like pink jacket and some jeans that I never knew good jeans until I started getting them from Stitch Fix. And
samesies.
It's the truth. It makes a huge difference. And it's like, oh, I can be comfortable all day and not feel like I have sandpaper on my legs or my butt. It's a great feeling. Stimer.
I was just shocked that you had jeans that felt like sandpaper at one point in your life.
I mean, that could be because my legs were really hairy too. I mean, who could say? So there's no commitment required, and you only pay for what you keep. Shipping, exchanges, and returns are always free. Plus, the $20 styling fee is automatically applied toward anything you keep from your box. You'll never have to think about looking good again with Stitch Fix. You can get started today at stitchfix.com/whatsgood to get an extra 25% off when you keep everything in your box. That's stitchfix.com/whatsgood. stitchfix.com/whatsgood.
That ain't no joke. An extra 25% off is a lot of a discount.
It is. It's a good one.
Mm-hmm. All right. So Let's talk about some games. The thing I want to talk about first, before we get into some of the stuff that you guys are playing, just because the embargo lifted while we were in London, is Call of Duty Modern Warfare.
Oh, yeah.
Did either of you watch the trailer that they released?
Yes. Mm-hmm. It looks so good.
So I had the opportunity during Judges Week to go to Infinity Ward and to see a demo, two demos of two different missions in the single player campaign, and to hear from a variety of members from the development team there. And they really did a deep dive with us in some of the work that's being done on this campaign. And I was very excited in the first place that they brought a campaign back to Call of Duty. I absolutely appreciate what Treyarch did with Black Ops 4. I thought it was the right call for their studio and for that franchise. Just for me, as a Call of Duty player, I prefer the single player campaigns, and I just dabble in multiplayer. But I know that I'm in the minority in worldwide Call of Duty players. So I was pretty pumped when they said that we were going to get a look at the campaign. So they revealed the name to us, and we all kind of looked around like, I don't know how I feel about them kind of rebooting Modern Warfare. But then they made a very good case as to what they're doing. So we heard from Taylor and Jacob, who are the narrative leads. They're former Naughty Dog developers, and they're now, well, they've been working with Infinity Ward for a while, and so they're kind of at the helm of the story of what's happening in this reboot of Modern Warfare. What they described it out was relevant headline situations where players impact a complex world that mirrors our own, continuity and consistency throughout the campaign. They had the thing that they mentioned was Jaws, not Saw. So when you think about the movie Jaws and the movie Saw, they don't want something that's like super grotesque and in your face and kind of like shock horror. They want something that's more intense and mature, and it kind of like builds in intensity throughout the campaign, which I thought was really interesting. So they want that intense and mature nature over gratuitous body count and gore. And so I really appreciated that, because a lot of times in these types of war video games, it is a lot about body count. And then they also mentioned it being more authentic and gritty, not superhero caricature, which is what a lot of military sims sometimes end up being, which isn't a bad thing. Again, it's just a different style of game. And they said, hey, we've done that. You know, we've given you these bombastic popcorn blockbuster campaigns in the Call of Duty franchise, and we wanted to do something a little bit different this time around. And so they showed us two story missions. The first one was after a terrorist attack in London. And this really just felt ripped from the headlines in a kind of disturbing way. So I'm not going to describe the whole of what we saw, but essentially after this terrorist attack, this bombing in London in Piccadilly Circus, which is crazy because we were like just there, the military is sent in to find this terrorist cell that's hiding in a flat in London. And so you are part of this covert team that goes on this super stealth mission to take out or take prisoner everybody that's inside this house. And so, you know, we've got the night vision goggles, we've got all the crazy gear that they're wearing, and, you know, they're very slowly and quietly moving through this house, like systematically taking all of these terrorists out as they move through the house. And what I thought was really kind of disturbing about watching this is the photorealism and the animation in the game is unreal. Like, the amount of tech that they've put into this Call of Duty is really, really impressive. And what I really appreciate about that is that I think there are studios like Activision, with their slate of developers underneath them, that have the ability to do that kind of technical innovation because they've made so much money that they can really take the risk to develop some of that stuff. So one of the things that they mentioned to us when they're talking about the animation and this photorealism that we heard from the animation team, Joel, who was the studio art director, talks about the photogrammetry technology that they're using in this game and about how it's an advancement on the technology in the last few years. in that they used real life capture locations where they went out into the world and took photos of, you know, burnt out cars from the California wildfires and other various locations and then imported those real images into the game. So when I talk about it being photorealistic, it really is photos of real things that have now been animated into the game. So they look real, which is kind of wild to see. They've also added things like, you know, complex characters, you know, pushing the boundaries of the medium. Where did my notes go? Oh, micro tiling is the other thing that I wanted to mention. So they scanned a bunch of employees that work at Infinity Ward to use them as bodies inside. So if you go through scenes where you see bodies on the ground, those are like actual real people bodies.
That's disturbing.
Yeah, no, it is. And that's the thing that I think I really walked away from. So, you know, going back to this demo that I saw. So as we're moving through, these aren't soldiers that you're killing. These are people in plain civilian clothes. They're a terrorist cell, but they're not dressed like this, you know, kind of idealized version of a terrorist that you might see on the news, right? You know, people holding machine guns or automatic weapons and things like that. Like, these are just people in regular street clothes that are not wearing gear, military gear of any kind, that are like at a kitchen table looking at maps, plotting out their next attack and things like that. And it was really disturbing. It was really gritty in a way that I wasn't expecting. And I kind of walked away from it going, I don't know what they're trying to accomplish here. On one hand, I'm really impressed by all of the tech that they're pushing into the game through animation, through lighting, through sound design. And I really appreciate that they're trying to do a gritty take on a narrative. But at the same time, the line that they're towing is a very dangerous line for a video game. Because Call of Duty isn't an interactive story where you're selecting narrative options and kind of doing like a walking sim. This is a game where you kill people. You kill a lot of people in Call of Duty games. And part of the fantasy of some Call of Duty games is that you get to be like a super soldier, right? Especially where the Modern Warfare franchise has gone over the last couple of iterations in the franchise. You really are kind of like this weird space soldier with all these super abilities and these bio suits and these crazy mech arms and booster legs and all this stuff that they've added. And so I'm really torn between, is this the right call for them to do something this controversial, or have they taken too much of the fantasy out and now they've made it so realistic that it's almost like you're playing a live leak video, which is something that this term, this idea of these live leak videos kind of was something we tossed around a lot when we were discussing it as judges after we saw it. It's like, it feels almost too real.
Mm. Interesting. So it sounds like other folks who saw it also felt the same way you did. Is that the case?
Yes. So I think we all walked away very impressed with what we saw. And I think Call of Duty absolutely needs to reinvent itself from time to time in order to stay relevant, because they've been dominating for so long. People are going to get bored with the same formula. So I think it's smart of them to take a different approach. And I just am really curious to see how it's going to play out long term. The second scene that we saw focused on the Freedom Fighters. So something I didn't mention is in Modern Warfare, there's going to be two major factions that you play as. It's the tier one like combat operators, which are your traditional, you know, high end military people that are equipped with like super gadgets, super weapons, very powerful, have all like the body armor. And then you've got the Freedom Fighters, who are people who come from these regions where the terrorists live and that have suffered cruelty under terrorist rule, and they're trying to fight back as our allies. So it does a lot feel like the parallel between what happened in the United States war in Iraq and Afghanistan, between the allied forces, whether it be, you know, UK or US troops or any of our other allies, and the freedom fighters that we know were working alongside, you know, Iraqi or Afghani locals who were on our side trying to, you know, fight alongside us. Like, the parallel to that is uncanny. Like, it's just, it's there, it's plain. And so you get to fight as these freedom fighters on the other side and kind of see where they come from. In particular, this young boy and this young girl You see them, their town get attacked by these Russian soldiers. Once again, the Russians being the bad guys, as they always are. And how they escape and watching their family members get, you know, brutally murdered in front of them and them fighting to survive and almost getting killed themselves in this scene. And it's really difficult to watch. And I don't know how we're going to play through that as a player. I'm kind of hoping it's just like an extended cutscene, but it didn't look like it. It looked like they were live playing this demo. We didn't get to play, of course. So I was a member of the Infinity War team that was driving the demo, but I'm concerned. Like, I'm like super conflicted and I don't know what to do about it.
I've noticed that when it comes to certain things in video games that you tend to feel uncomfortable, right? Look at the, oh gosh, what are they called? The newts? Is that what they're called?
The newts, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know you struggled with that. And then there was another instance of something similar. And then I think Steimer and I tend to have the mindset of it's a video game and we can kind of just like shut that off. Unless it's a dog. If there's a dog in a video game, then I'm like, no, what are you doing? But no, it's interesting because I see what you're saying. And as video game technology improves and as, you know, we have the technology to draw in from these real world parallels and translate that into something that looks like almost, like you said, like a live league video, it's going to be interesting to see how people react to that. I think this is probably just a natural evolution of the industry, right? Games are going to become more and more visceral. And I don't know if that's something that should be, pushed up against or pushed, pushed back on. Yeah, that's what I'm trying to say. Because, you know, if you look at video games as art, I feel like they can convey emotions. And the more realistic the game is, and obviously I think the more in tune we're going to be with the message that those games are trying to push. But then it raises the question, you know, is there a fine line? Are we going to get to a point where these modern warfare, these war shooters are going to be something that's a little too touchy because of how realistic they are? And it's going to be interesting to see because
especially the modern warfare franchise has always been controversial. But even, I mean, I am curious to see it because like what I'm curious to see what Andrea is saying in action a little bit more of like just how that hyper-realism. I wonder if it, you know, at some point once we get graphical fidelity that does look much more like you are playing a live video or you are playing a movie, if it could potentially breed like more insensitivity to certain events like this. Like if you're like, mm-hmm. oh, well, whatever. That I went through there in this video game and I did this thing and it's fine. And like, but then when things happen in real life, maybe you are less shocked by them because there are things that are happening in games that do feel more real than they do than they ever have before. Like, obviously, with the very first Modern Warfare, I haven't played through a Call of Duty campaign since Modern Warfare 2. Because I've played them and I have not finished any of them, and they're not even long, so that should tell you how much they've held my attention. But I still remember the first one and playing through it. And I remember distinctly when you die, like when you have like the killed in action screen that comes up. And because I remember I was still living in my parents' house and I was talking to my dad and I was like, wait, what? What? Dad, what does KIA mean? And he's like, killed in action. And I was like, I'm the hero. Like, I can't die. What do you mean I died? I don't die. So I had like that weird moment there that kind of stuck with me. And obviously there are other great missions in that game too. The ghillie suits are great. So it's just like, I am curious to see how they are taking this and trying to transform it while also seemingly incorporating more of the disturbing nature of Modern Warfare 2's airport scene, where it's just kind of like, we're gonna make you uncomfortable. Although skippable, but now it's just like, no, here's the whole game. Here, we're gonna make you feel something odd. And like, I guess I'm wondering if that's what Call of Duty people expect or would be surprised by.
Well, I have no doubt that they're going to have a scene that's as uncomfortable as that scene, because while they were talking about authentic realism and how this is the most realistic game that Infinity Ward has ever made, and that they've exhaustively researched this and that they've proactively ripped or these provocative subject matters from real headlines. They say that, I wrote this quote down during the presentation. It's gameplay ripped from the headlines that only Modern Warfare would, quote, have the guts to show. So I don't know what that means, but to me, I think it's intriguing and interesting, and I think it's necessary for them to go to that place in order to reconnect with fans who have walked away from Call of Duty. And so I'm not saying this is a bad thing. I'm saying making me uncomfortable means that they made me feel something, and that is in and of itself an accomplishment.
Yeah.
And I think that it's important for us all to potentially look at subject matter that's ripped from the headlines and recognize how it makes us feel, because so often we just ignore it, or we push it away, or we distract ourselves from all of the terrible things that are happening around the world. And if they can kind of put it front and center in your face in this really hyper realistic way, then maybe that's a good thing. Maybe what they're doing is saying, hey, we need to have a collective moment where we recognize that this isn't a fantasy, that this is a reality. You know, maybe that's the angle that they're going for with it, which I think is a really interesting one. And so there's definitely a lot more to learn about what's going to happen in this game and about these factions and how they're going to work. And of course, you know, we can't anticipate, you know, a multiplayer reveal later in the summer. They traditionally do their multiplayer reveals, I believe, around August. And so we didn't talk about multiplayer at this session, but, you know, they just went through exhaustive details about the tech that's involved in this game, from the new engine that they built just for their Modern Warfare, from their tech studio in Poland, talking about cloth rendering, and how one of the engineers was talking about how proud he was about how the ghillie suit looks in this game.
That's amazing.
And like the individual motion on the little pieces of the ghillie suit, talking about 4K, HDR, ray tracing, geometry, dynamic GI and reflections, and the volumetric lighting, the spectral rendering, like all kinds of cool nerdy stuff when it comes to the tech of the game that I think so often Call of Duty games get overlooked, how spectacular the tech is and how smooth these games run. Like, people love to hate on Call of Duty, and I'm not saying that you don't get to have your feelings about it, but I was always a staunch supporter of the amazing tech and the amazing game development that went into Call of Duty games. Whether or not you liked the gameplay, I think, you know, I would hope people would be able to put aside and say, yeah, you know, maybe playing matches of domination over and over again isn't my thing, but the fact that I can recognize that the way that that game runs is pretty smooth, and they don't generally have a lot of bugs and problems in their campaigns, is maybe worth giving them at least a nod for. So,
go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I was going to say there was just an interesting quote that I started reading this PC Games and article, and it's interviewing some of the folks that worked on the game. And this quote stuck out to me because I think it's applicable to more of what we were talking about before with the uncomfortable nature of the subject matter. He said, I think this is Jake Minkoff is saying this. Yes. I think there's a tendency to feel like we can't do things that Homeland or American Sniper does. TV and movies get to tell these relatable, realistic, relevant, and provocative stories that really touch people. And basically, and then another guy interjects, and they kind of are talking about how it is acceptable for other mediums to kind of touch on these subject matter, but it hasn't yet really been as much for games. So anyways, I thought that was interesting.
It is, but like the thing that I would say back to him is because it puts the gun in your hand.
Yeah, no,
I play a video game.
It's obviously a lot more interactive than a TV or a movie. So
That to me is the thing that I especially in today's political climate, particularly in the United States, you know, I can't necessarily speak for other countries around the world, how they'll feel about the nature of this game when it comes out. But with all of the gun violence that's happening in the United States, making a photorealistic game where you're shooting people that look like real people versus a game like Destiny where you're shooting made up aliens with like laser guns, it's something that I think is worth pausing and at least having conversation about and having a dialogue about and going, is this the right call? do we want to be telling this story in this way where we're giving people the agency to kind of feel empowered to murder somebody that looks like a real person? I don't know.
Yeah.
Open-ended question to think on.
It's interesting because the envelope's being pushed, right? In video games, we've had the opportunity to shoot normal-looking people, but it's never really felt... I've never ever, except for the No Russian scene, that one kind of gave me pause. And again, any scene with the dog. But I've never felt uncomfortable with that. And it's not because I'm a cold-hearted killer or anything. It's just I have this switch where I'm playing a game. It's like, okay, you know, I can switch this off. I don't think this is like actually a thing I'm going to do in real life by any means. So I'm really curious. Not. Yeah, I'm curious to see how I'm going to do with this. Because it sounds like you're not the only one who gave it some thought and pause after you saw it in action.
Yeah, the game that immediately came to mind after I left the demo was Spec Ops: The Line. I don't know if either of you have played that game, but
yeah.
That game also pushed a lot of boundaries in narrative, talking about what is and isn't acceptable in war scenarios where, you know, you're killing civilians and things of that nature in really kind of brutal ways. And that game had a lot of other technical problems, so I'm not trying to compare these at all, but just narratively, it reminded me of how they really pushed some boundaries with what that what was really allowed for game developers to tackle. And so I think that this is the right call for them to go to this place, because otherwise it's just yet another Call of Duty, right? And so now they're at least, you know, having the guts, as they call it, to go to that place. Whether or not it's going to be successful for them remains to be seen.
It's going to sell so much. Let's be real.
Yeah.
Actually, I also read that they're so committed to this gritty and realistic tone that they're not doing zombies in this game. Did they talk about that?
I did not talk about zombies because I didn't ask. I just assumed, because it was a reboot of Modern Warfare, that we weren't going to see any zombies. Like I had mentioned, they were not talking about multiplayer, mm-hmm. so I didn't even bother asking them about like Battle Royale or multiplayer modes or how they're going to broach this idea of photorealism and rip from the headlines in their multiplayer, which is clearly, you know, not meant to be this realistic, gritty experience. It's designed to be fun and fast and
photorealistic zombies.
Esports. So I don't know how they're going to approach that. We're hopefully going to get more details about what they're doing with, you know, their multiplayer modes. Like I mentioned, I don't anticipate them happening at E3. I anticipate them happening. Historically, they've always done it later in the summer. So, okay. Enough about that. Thank you for letting me talk. I didn't get an opportunity to chat about that, but I thought it was something worth discussing. Britt.
Yes.
You have been playing Dauntless.
I have. Yes, I've been playing Dauntless, and it's kind of the best thing ever. So, yeah, like Modern War, hearing you talk about it, Andrea, is kind of what turned my crank, flipped my switch, floated my boat, if you will. And I have always been interested in Monster Hunter, but I think the reality hit me as soon as I started playing it on PlayStation 4. It was just that, or Xbox, whatever I played it on, there's too much going on. I know some people love all the micromanaging and like having to cook your meals and use your little whetstones every now and again. But to me, it was just, I had the most fun when I was actually hitting the damn monsters. And that's, I think, ultimately why I stopped playing. The UI got too much. It was just too much to handle. So when you were talking about it and you said you just go and the fat's trimmed, you just go kill the monsters, I thought, well, that sounds lovely. And that's exactly what it is. I love that there's, you know, like you were talking about RPG elements. You get to level up your armor and your weapons, and the weapons are fun to play. And you literally just hop in, you kill a thing, you get your materials, you hop out, you hop right back in. And I've just been having a blast with it. I've bought some custom arrival emojis. I got the logging in, where you literally drop in as a log. And then
that's pretty funny.
And then you like pop out of it and it's like, ah. But yeah, it's just so much fun. It's a perfect game for me and Jason. We've been playing it just to kind of pick up, do like 5 or 10 hunts and then set it down, because, you know, it is story light. And that's something you also mentioned. And that's fine, because I think where this game really shines is the gameplay and the hunting of the monsters and figuring out what the weak points are and working together and figuring out what the best, because each monster is different, right? If you're going to have someone really fast or something that flies or something heavy, you're going to want to adjust the weapons that you're using against them. And I think this is a really cool thing. I think Dauntless is really neat in what it's doing. And I think that there's a reason it's as successful as it is. really liking
it. Their launch numbers were really impressive. I think they touted 6 million players in launch week, which is fantastic. You know, congrats to the team at Phoenix Labs. I jumped in this week. I'm going to admit I spend a little bit too much time in the create a character section.
Dude, there's so many options. Unfortunately, when I created my character, the game was like early, had just like launched publicly, and so it was crashing. So I had to create my character like 5 times before I got one that stuck. So now my lady kind of looks like a blonde Skeletor with pigtails.
But you can change your appearance at any time.
I know, which is great. I kind of dig it though. I'm kind of attached.
That sounds right. Yeah, I immediately bought dyes because I needed to have my armor like pink and purple.
Of course.
Let's go. And thank you to Phoenix Labs for providing us with some specialty codes to check out and see some of the customizations in the game. As we mentioned, this is a free-to-play game. So if you guys want to check it out, I believe somebody has started a Dauntless WGG guild.
Mm-hmm.
I've been a little busy with E3 prep, so haven't gotten a chance to do that. But with crossplay, we can all play together, man.
The future is here.
Peace.
Very exciting. Cool. Stimer,
yeah.
You have been playing a couple things. You played some Unravel 2 on your Switch when we went to London.
Yes, when I was flying to and from good old jolly London town. I was like, I want to play something, but I want to play something cute. I just want to play something that I can kind of like chill with. I don't have to think too hard about. I can just go. And then I went through the good old Nintendo store and was like, Unravel 2! I forgot about that game. After playing it with Brittany at E3, where we had a glorious time entertaining the developers during that demo.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's not as much fun without you, Brittany.
Okay,
I'm going to say it right now.
Good.
But otherwise, it's a really cute platformer, puzzle platformer. You know, you have to figure out exactly when you need to move which character where. My only complaint, and it is the one thing that drives me absolutely fucking bonkers when I'm playing this game, is that the mapping of switch between the characters and combining the characters is the same button. And so a lot of the time I will sit there and be like, fucking merge, 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 god damn it, merge. And it's just like bloop, 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 like back and forth between them. And I'm
become one.
I'm going to like flip a fucking table, god damn it, become one. And like so that
you become one.
They didn't listen to that song, so they're just like hopping back and forth. I don't know what's going on. If you are playing with somebody, you won't have that problem because you won't be needing to combine them. You can just go. But otherwise, I really do enjoy the game, and I think it's really cute and well designed, and the levels are well designed. So I'm having a good time with it. It is a nice little jaunt.
Just as a refresher for people, Unravel 2 is the follow up to Unraveled, where you play as Yarny, and then Yarny has a little buddy, another Yarny, a blue and a red one. When you combine, you make a purple Yarny.
And you can change colors.
Oh, really?
Yeah, you can customize your Yarnies.
Nice. Mm. That's awesome.
Yeah.
And it's like a little puzzle adventure, side scroller.
It's cute.
I'll never forget when Unravel was unveiled at EA's press conference that one year.
So adorable.
The sweetest thing ever.
It is very, very cute.
Ugh.
Okay, I'm done. I just played this level on the Yarny where a fucking chicken was running after me, and I was like, no!
Oh, yeah, I remember that.
Don't you eat me!
Why would a chicken want to eat yarn?
Because they're stupid. Chickens are stupid, and they just eat things.
But they taste so good.
That checks out. You also dipped your toes into the waters of Rage, too.
Yeah. I've been playing this. I played that over the weekend. I am kind of digging it. I don't hate it. I don't think it's the world's greatest game. But if you're like, Rage 2 came out? I'll be like, yes. Yes, young child, it did. It's basically a open world first person shooter with some superpowers and some driving, and the driving, as usual, I can take or leave, but I dig the shooting and I dig the powers. I need to go get more of them. They are scattered about, and you have to kind of
the nanotrite abilities.
Sorry?
The nanotrite abilities?
Yes. So yeah, you're, I mean, I'm going to be completely honest with you. I listen to podcasts while playing this game. I do not listen to the story.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And it's actually one of the only times I've done that. But I'm like, you know what? I am not playing this game for you to tell me about this world. I don't particularly care. What I want to do is I want to shoot a bunch of shit. And I want to slam it to the ground. And I want to force push people. And like, that's what I want to do. So I listen to like my psychology podcast while I'm playing Rage 2.
While you're mass murdering people very violently.
Yeah, exactly. Amazing. Exactly. I listened to like he was interviewing Caesar Milan while I'm murdering a bunch of people. It was great. And so I don't particularly know exactly what is happening in the story. I'm not paying attention. I do not mind. And I'm just really chilling, clunking along, killing a lot of like mutants and people and try to save the world, I think, because that's usually what you do in these types of games. The only thing, yeah, that I don't even mind it, actually, because the driving's not that bad. The roads are wide enough where I don't feel like I'm going to. But it's not like Days Gone where you're like, oh, my God, driving on these narrow fucking pathways, motorcycle, and I'm hitting a tree and I flew off the thing. Like, no, that's not what this is. This is like, OK, cool. I can take a nice, long, leisurely drive. The map is not too large, so poof, thank God there. And I actually looked it up, and I was like, how long is this game? It's not that long. Perfect. It's like the perfect bite-sized little open-world game where you go around, shoot a bunch of shit, and smash a bunch of things. And I'm like, yeah, that sounds good. So if that sounds good to you, I would recommend picking up Rage 2. I don't think it's going to be like Game of the Year material, but it is a fun game. So,
cool. Why not? I'm excited to play. I just like have not had time to like start anything since it came out, because right after it came out, we had like a couple of days and then we left.
Yeah. Off we went.
That's why I haven't played Dauntless, because I was like, oh, maybe I'll have a chance to play both of these. Nope.
Yeah, we're kind of in a weird spot right now where there's several games I want to pick up. I want to play Layers of Fear 2. I want to do Chaos Bane, and then there's another game out called Super Cane Magic Zero. That's like a really cute co-op action RPG. But yeah, like with E3 right around the corner, it's like, what's the point? I'm going to start it, and then we're not going to be able to play it for like at least a week and a half or something. So,
yep.
Yep.
But you have been playing Observation.
I have, because this is a 5 to 10 hour game, so I think that's doable.
Yeah. Reasonable goals. 2019.
Yeah, so Observation is developed by No Code, published by Devolver Digital. It's on the Epic Game Store and PS4. And just before I even start talking about it, I have never seen 2001 A Space Odyssey, but from what I've been told, if you like that, you're going to love this game. So I'm just going to throw that out there. So here's a little blip on it. Observation is a narrative sci-fi thriller uncovering what happened to Dr. Emma Fisher and the crew of her mission through the lens of the station's artificial intelligence, Sam. Players assume the role of Sam by operating the station's control systems, cameras, and tools to assist Emma in discovering what is happening to the station, the vanished crew, and Sam himself. So I've never played a game like this before where, like I just said, you are the AI. So the game starts and you hear a woman talking and she's like, Sam, Sam. Something's happened. Blah. And then it's like, she wants to log in. So then you have to scan her voice waves and then you have to confirm that it's her. And then you have to help her, you know, like put out a fire. And you have to help her open up doors and do this, that, and the other. And this is just the intro. And so how it works is you have all these sectors. You're on Observation, which is the space station. And it's pretty large. And there's different sections all across the station, and there's security cameras or surveillance cameras in each of these rooms. And so you can log into those at any time. And then from there, you can scan the room. I think each room has about 2 or 3 cameras, so you can get different angles. You'll scan the room. You'll look for things that you can hack into. You can find documents and read them and scan it if you're curious to know what's going on with the story, because something has happened to Emma and the crew and you're trying to figure out what's happened. I'm only maybe like an hour and a half or 2 hours into it, so I don't have a huge grasp on like what's actually happening. But it's really interesting, and eventually you'll get the opportunity to have a little sphere that you can like hack into and move around at will throughout the station, so you can kind of actually like traverse around and look around at stuff. It's really interesting, and I'm happy it's a shorter game, because I don't know, you know, if I could do like a full like 15 to 20 hours in this format, just because it is so different and hands off ish. But it's interesting enough, and I'm intrigued enough by the story that I want to figure out what happened to Emma and her crew. I do want to put out a warning that if you have epilepsy or if you tend to get migraines, that this is not a good game for you to play. A lot of people have come out and said that they started playing it and their migraines will get triggered, that people can maybe only play for like 5 minutes at a time. So just a warning.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thankfully, since some of those articles have gone up, they have put epilepsy warnings at the beginning of the game. But
I can't believe they didn't do that in the first place.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
You think so, right?
You need to make sure people don't have photosensitivity.
Yeah, because if you tend to get motion sickness in a game, too, you might feel a little woozy. I didn't have any issues, but because you are in space, right? So sometimes your angles will vary differently depending on, you know, which camera you're looking through and your little sphere guy is kind of like rolling around a little bit. Things are upside down, right side up, whatever. But yeah, it's really interesting and it's kind of scary and it gives me the abdabs. Which is British slang for to be scared or frightened of something.
Ah. Good for you.
Thank you,
I'm
Teddy.
Glad you worked that in there.
Of course. But yeah, check it out. I think it's $25 on PS4. I'm assuming it's the same price on Epic.
That would make sense.
Yeah.
Unless you got it on the Epic sale, I guess.
Which I did not. Dang.
Well, didn't Devolver send you a code?
They did for Epic. And then I was too lazy to respond and ask for one for PS4 because I just wanted to start it right then and there. So I just bought it myself.
Good for you.
Anna.
Support the devs.
Exactly.
So I'm not going to really talk too much about Control and Journey to the Savage Planet, both of which I got to play at Judges Week because I talked about them extensively during GDC. I didn't get to... So basically, Brittany, you remember the demo that we saw of Journey to the Savage Planet?
Yes, absolutely.
I essentially got to play that at Judges Week.
Did you kick the one-eyed birds?
Oh, I kicked so many of those little puffer birds.
Oh,
kicked
you're so mean.
Many of them. Well, you kind of have to kill some of them in order to progress through certain things. It's hard for me to explain, but the game looks fun. I think it's going to be a nice, chill,
bird
relaxing space adventure game. I'm a bird kicker. Hey, listen, those little puffer birds, they'll go after you.
Okay.
They're not innocent.
Self-defense. Okay, fine.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I'm not going to try to pretend like they are peaceful until you attack them and then they attack you back. But if you accidentally hit one somehow with something, if you're like throwing something or whatever and it hits one, then they'll come after you. But it's really cute. I'm excited for that. That game's not coming out, I think, until 2020 or early 2020. I think they were targeting. So we'll probably reconnect with that game once it gets closer to launch. Control, of course, coming out much closer. It's coming out, I believe, in the end of August, August 24th, I believe, August 27th, one of those dates. One of you wants to look that up real quick. So I got to play a different demo than what we played at GDC. This one was more story-based. Was really challenging from a gameplay perspective. I think it's going to be interesting to kind of play that game from the beginning because they kind of dropped us a little bit too far into the story and I kind of felt lost. Mm. Sometimes that's a unfortunate byproduct of showing a vertical slice of your game to members of the media is that they want to show you know, what the game is capable of by showing you later things. But the unfortunate part is you don't know what the heck you're doing.
Yeah. It's August 27th, by the way. For Control.
Okay, thank you for confirming. But the other game I got to play, speaking of short and sweet experiences, is Trover Saves the Universe. So this is a game that's on PSVR or on regular PS4, so you can play it in VR or not, if you prefer. This is from Squanch Games. This is the panel that I worked with Justin Roiland on back at PAX East. And of course, Squanch provided me with a code for the game. If you like the humor of Justin Roiland and Rick and Morty, I think that you will enjoy your time with Trover Saves the Universe. It's definitely quirky and fun. It's from the team that made Accounting Plus, so there's a lot of that same humor in the game as well. And I'm just really enjoying it. It's a nice, peaceful, easy thing to just pick up and play for a little bit. I'm almost done with it. I think it's like a 5-hour game-ish. I think I'm probably like 75% of the way through. And it's just... It's so silly and dumb in a variety of ways. You can't help but kind of giggle at some of the stuff that you see. And the enemies are weird. And the way that they're always talking about each other and talking back to you. But like, oh, like the cursing is also ridiculous in this game.
Yes.
There is a censored version if you're worried about that. Or if it's something you want to play. If your kids are walking by, you can play the censored version.
But is it just bleeps and bloops?
I haven't actually played the censored version. because at the very beginning, when you select the mature version, it's Trevor saying, "Okay, I won't tell your parents."
That's cute.
That was a nice little touch. But essentially, it's a bunch of enemies that are just basically like, "Oh, I'm gonna fucking kill you, man! I'm gonna fucking get you. You just wait, man! I'm gonna fucking kill you so hard!" And then you like kill me, like, "Oh man! Oh, you fucking hit me! Oh, you're fucking killing me!" It's so stupid, and I just love it. It's just like a lot of Justin's voices that he does in Rick and Morty. And so, if you're interested in that kind of humor. Mm-hmm. I'm going to be honest. This game is not lighting the world on fire with innovation.
Fair.
It's a very simply animated game that is funny and quirky and is a really like nice, lighthearted experience. It gets a little repetitive once you get to the back end of the game because some of the tropes and things that they've introduced kind of lose the laughs because they've reused some of the jokes. But... or some of the scenarios, I should say. The writing isn't identical by any means, but you're like, oh, you kind of did this bit already. But I've been having a lot of fun with it. It's super easy to play both in VR and out of VR. I have said this before that I think it shines in VR. It's because it's clearly designed for it, but I've played it in both because I don't like to wear the headset all the time. So I, pop it off and just play it regular, and it's perfectly fine. So
it's not like I thought Falcon Age was a little weird out of VR because that one was so much designed for it. So it doesn't feel like that.
No. So what I appreciate about what they did with the traversal is that so they have these teleport pods that you have to use. So you play as a Chororpian. If you guys haven't seen any gameplay from Trover Saves the Universe, the way that they kind of handle it, both in VR and non-VR, is you can see your hands at the bottom of the screen holding the DualShock controller. And then in VR, when you, look down, you can, see your legs and things like that. And you can tilt the camera down with the sticks on the controller and see part of your body as well. So you play this Chororpian, and you control Trover. So Trover obviously talks independently of you, but you use the sticks traditionally to look and move. And so Trover wanders around the world, but you stay stationary. So if you're looking with the camera, it's the Chororpian looking, not Trover. So you can see Trover moving around and in wherever you push him to. But in order to kind of progress through the world, you have to teleport using these pods. So you have to move Trover onto the pod, and then you hit the trigger button, and then it teleports you forward. So it's not like the problem you were running into in Falcon Age where you're like, I want to walk to this place, but I can't because it's clearly gated for VR. All of the movement is identical whether you're in VR or non-VR, and I think that was a really smart call because in VR, that smooth motion is what tends to make me pretty nauseous, but the teleporting is the easier thing for me where it doesn't give me any of the motion sickness in VR. And so doing it in non-VR, there was a couple of points where I got a little frustrated that I had to use the teleportation pads, but I understand why they kept it the same in order to maintain consistency between the two platforms in order to let you hot swap between them if you wanted to.
Cool.
Yeah.
It sounds like a game I'd like. Sounds like the humor is right up my alley.
Oh, Britt, you would love this game. I highly recommend you check it out. It's super fun. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. That's going to do it for our hands-on section for this week, unless you want to talk about Ace Attorney again.
Oh, no. I just finished up Justice for All, so I just have one more game left to go in the trilogy, and I love the series. I want to see more of it, maybe at E3, if not next year. Let's go. That's all.
All right.
More
to the wish
attorney.
List. I stick
object.
With us, everybody.
I don't, though.
Right
I don't.
Hold it.
Welcome back, everybody. It's segment 3 of the What's Good Games podcast. And this week, our feature segment is all about our trip to London Town. But before we get to that, we'd love to tell you that this segment is brought to you by DoorDash. It's dinner time and your stomach is a rumbling and you still don't know what you're going to eat tonight. sound familiar? With DoorDash, you don't need to get up from that couch to get a meal cooking. DoorDash connects you to your favorite restaurants in your city. Ordering is super easy. Just use the DoorDash app and choose what you want to eat, and a Dasher will bring it to you anywhere you are. Not only is that burger place you love on DoorDash already, trust me, we've checked, but over 310,000 other amazing restaurants are too. DoorDash connects you with door-to-door delivery in over 3,300 cities, all 50 states, and even Canada. Order from your local go-tos or choose from your favorite chain like Chipotle, Wendy's, or the Cheesecake Factory, which I've mentioned is a Drake household regular. I can't get enough of that Tuscan chicken. But Stimer, every time we talk about DoorDash,
yes,
you keep talking my ear off about Pie Hole.
Pie Hole is the world's greatest restaurant. And if you live in the LA area, you should see if they'll deliver to you, because Pie Hole has a mac and cheese pie. And it's just like, it's like a chicken pie pie, but macaroni and cheese inside of it. And it's fucking incredible. And they also really just, I mean, good regular pies. So I also always order myself a slice of their apple pie. Because, I mean, like, I need a little dessert after my entire mac and cheese pie that I eat by myself.
Now that everyone's thinking about pie, if you need pie right now, you can go to DoorDash by getting $5 off your first order when you download the app. So pull up your phone, go to the store of your choice, whether it be Android or iOS, download the DoorDash app, enter the promo code What's Good, and you'll get $5 off your first order of $15 or more. Again, get the DoorDash app from the App Store and enter the promo code What's Good for $5 off your first order from DoorDash. Food. Speaking of London.
Oh, my God.
I don't know if that's a segue or not.
Speaking of food, all the things we ate in London.
Oh, my gosh. We ate so much good food in London. So Brittany wasn't with us because she was with her family for the most of the trip. But Stimer and I had proper bangers and mash. Did you get any bangers and mash when you were there?
I did not have bangers and mash.
So one John Drake, who happens to go to London quite a bit because Sony has an office there and he works with a team in that office, said, yo, you guys should check out this place called Mother Mash. And we were like, that sounds delicious. They have all these different kinds of mashed potatoes.
I love mashed potatoes.
So they're a sausage place. So bangers and mash, for people who aren't familiar, is basically like sausage links, like the big, like a fat sausage. And then it comes on a pile of mashed potatoes. And then there's gravy on top of it. Yeah. I mean, the pillow could work there.
So amazing. Sausage.
So how,
they have
how
different
was
kinds
it?
Of mashed potatoes.
I want the vicarious. Give me all the visceral details of this banger and mash.
So the mashed potatoes I got had cheese and green onion in them, which was delicious. And I got a pork and chili sausage. So you would like it because it was nice and spicy, but it wasn't like overly spicy. It was just the right amount of heat. And then it had this really tasty onion gravy on top.
I'm so hungry. That sounds so good. Did they give you the sausage burps?
No.
No.
Oh, great.
What are sausage burps?
Sometimes like, you get bad sausage.
You get the bad burps.
I've never had that.
Like the meat burps? You've never gotten bad meat burps?
No, Samer, you've gotten bad meat burps. Meat burps. And I know this because during some of our summer recordings in the studio, the fan will waft it over to me.
It's probably just me.
But it's
probably you.
Yeah, I was like,
bad meat burps.
I thought it was Stimer. I am so sorry, Stimer. I now put all that blame on Andrea for making the hairs on my chest curl even harder.
I take the blame. Remember, we had the meat burps at the concert.
Yeah, we had some gnarly meat burps. Okay, that makes sense. I apologize, Simer, for blaming you for
I'm
those
like,
burps.
Did we eat at the concert?
No, remember we ate at the hen and
the coop place.
What was it called?
I tweeted about it. I'll look it up. Hold on.
That place did not make me. Yeah, no, my stomach was fine.
Oh no, I had the burps. It was worth it though. It was fine. Super good.
Felt a-okay.
the food that I had that kind of threw me for a loop, and I was telling this to all the lovely folk who showed up at our meet and greet. Okay, it's called Yard and Coop.
And yes, Yard and Coop.
The fish and chips. You know, here when I order fish and chips, I expect to get, you know, like three or four nice just pieces of meat that's been deep fried with some, you know, like large fries is what we like
to call
them.
You're expecting like fish fillets.
Yeah, fish fillets. We go to this, we're on our Saturday around London tour, and we have like an hour to grab some food. So I'm like, oh, I'm going to get me some fish and chips. That's all the pubs are talking about. I'm so excited. And then this huge like fish, it's a deep fried fish, skin on and everything. Its tail is still like curled, was just like placed in front of me. And for some reason, man, it just turned me off. I got like instantly nauseous from it.
So it was a whole fish.
It's a whole fish. No, this happened to me.
The head isn't there. No head. Just like the body and tail and skin. And like through like the deep fried crust parts, you can see like the skin like shining through. Well, I can't.
No, I had this happen to me. Obviously not this last trip, but the previous trip when I went to London, I went with my family. My sister and I went to like this pub and there was fish and chips. And I was like, sure. I'll have some fish and chips. It was the whole fucking fish, head and all.
Oh,
and
you like the head.
Eye, the head. The eye is like staring up at me. And I'm just like, oh no.
Oh no.
What do I do? I don't want to eat this. And I just like basically like destroyed it in the way that where I like got to the middle part, like where it's the actual fish part, and then like kind of ate it with my fork. And it's like, this is terrible.
I was definitely a fish out of water, pun totally intended, when I was ordering food for the first time. Because, yeah, like the fish and chips, that like was a weird thing. And then puddings is what they call their desserts, I suppose. And I was talking to this again with the lovely folks who were at a meetup. They're like, yeah, puddings, desserts. That's, you know, so I ordered a cheesecake and it came in a cup. And it was of a pudding consistency that we would think here. I was like, okay, this is odd. It tasted fine, but, it was
like pudding consistency, but they called it cheesecake.
Yeah, yeah. So the dessert menu, the big title is puddings, and then underneath that it said cheesecake. So I was like,
oh, maybe it was cheesecake flavored pudding.
Well, I asked the people at our meetup, and they said puddings is like a universal word for dessert. So like it's their dessert menu instead
of
saying.
You can look it up in the book right now too.
Oh my god,
you have a whole guide.
So hold that if you could. On the other side of your microphone, so it's right in the center of your camera when you're done looking it up, the book, so we could
see it. The first word I look, perfect. Randy, to be sexually aroused. I know that from Austin Powers. All right. Yeah, pudding.
While she's looking that up. Okay, go ahead.
Pudding, the dessert part of meal, not actual pudding.
That's weird.
I don't make up the rules over in London.
It's true. You don't. We learned some new rules about things that we thought that we knew. So Steimer and I, just like Brittany, we all had the same idea. We're like, we have to book high tea. We're like, let's all book high tea. It's going to be great. And then I did some Google searching, and everything I kept booking or looking to book kept calling it afternoon tea. And so one morning when I was very jet lagged,
it was like 4 a.m.
Steimer and I were awake, and I was trying to find a place for us to book what I thought was high tea. I learned the very stark difference between afternoon tea and high tea. So us Americans have been wrongly calling afternoon tea high tea for far too long, apparently, because they are wildly different meals. So we learned that afternoon tea is the thing that we think of with like the little mini sandwiches and the scones and the little cakes.
And thinking of it as like very posh.
Yeah.
Yes. That is afternoon tea. And its history comes from the late 1800s when the really rich people got hungry between lunch and dinner because they traditionally ate lunch around noon and then they would eat dinner much later around 8 p.m. So, of course, you know, you get
a little snacky
hungry
snack.
Around 3, 4 o'clock. You need a little something, something. So this woman, Anne, I forgot what her last name is, she kept having tea and cakes delivered to her room. And so finally she was like, I'm just going to invite some friends over and we're all going to have tea and cakes together. So I don't have to eat my little mini sandwiches by myself and feel like a fatty. I'm going to bring my friends over. And so it became this tradition where the wealthy would sit at these low tables. So it's sometimes called low tea. And they would have, you know, little sandwiches, little scones with clotted cream and jam. And apparently there's a big debate or schools of thought of, do you put the cream on first or the jam on first?
I think both are socially acceptable because they're different styles, right?
It's like with the tea and the milk. Do you put the milk or the tea first? I'm with Steimer, you put the tea first, but
yeah.
um, And so we learned that we've been calling afternoon tea high tea because high tea is actually for the lower class and is actually served around dinner time and is meant to be like a hearty meal. And so it was like more like meat pies and things that were much heavier in nature because it was designed to be a full meal, not to be like a bridge between meals. And it was something that the working class would eat immediately after getting off of shift, whether it be like in a factory or out of the fields or wherever they were doing their, like, you know, their low blue collar jobs that the people sipping their fancy afternoon teacups look down on them. So if you ask for high tea, we learned in London, you're going to get a much different meal set than you would get if you want afternoon tea.
I'm so happy you told me all the information. So after our meetup Sunday night, Jason and I grabbed dinner with you two ladies, and you were telling me all about the etiquette of afternoon tea, and I was about to call it high tea. And you have to start at the bottom and work your way up. You have one person pour all the drinks. It's a big ordeal.
Yeah, I didn't know either. But I wanted to make sure if we were going to go in and get this fancy afternoon tea that we're, you know, looking all nice in our dresses and stuff, yeah, that we weren't being uncouth Americans eating the cakes first. You got to eat the sandwiches first.
I mean, yeah, that's like, and if you were any child, it's like you need to eat like your veggies, AKA, or like your real food first. Granted, cucumber sandwiches are not like super real food, but
yeah.
More so than a scone slash the little, oh my God, the amazing tiny little desserts. I love them so much.
So good. Yes.
We were at the Ritz. So we decided that, you know, we're in London. This is my mom, dad, Jason, and I. If we're going to be here, like, let's just do it crazy and let's go to the Ritz and do freaking afternoon tea. Thankfully,
yeah,
they stuck the four Americans in like the farthest back corner of the area, which I was very thankful for. But it was still like beautiful setting, and like this customer service, whatever you want to call it, was just incredible, beautiful. Yeah, you know, you're among everything. But yeah, it was an experience. You know, Jason got way too hot in his coat jacket, and so he went to go take off his coat jacket, and like someone was on him like flies on shit, and they're like, oh no, you cannot take that off. And he was like, I'm overheating, I feel like I'm going to pass out. And the guy said, you got to step outside then. So off you went to go step outside and cool down because you cannot take off your jacket. And I showed up with like a nice, like not leathered, but looked like a leather jacket. And the lady was like, hello, welcome. Now go please check your coat. You can't have that in here. I was like, okay. But no, it was, I'm glad we did it. It was a really fun experience. What I would like to know, and I don't know if you ladies know this, is that like the equivalent of a happy hour over here? Is this something people do? Because that's expensive. You know, like high tea is expensive. Is it something like, what's the occasion for an afternoon tea?
It's, I was rich and I'm hungry.
I mean, like in today's, like, you know,
today is I want to be fancy and feel like I'm rich.
Okay. Yeah,
that's pretty much it.
I saw a lot of friends there. I saw a lot of couples, you know, doing
it as
well.
It's just
like
a fun thing to be like, oh, we're going to go for like afternoon tea.
And yeah.
It's just
like
kind
going
of
for fancy brunch, but just at a different time of day.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was. It was fun. It'd be fun if we had that over here, but I have a feeling we'd tarnish it and screw it up somehow.
I mean, they have afternoon tea in LA.
Oh.
Yeah, certain cities offer afternoon tea at select locations that do it in a British style. But, I mean, I'm not sure if you're going to find one in your neck of the woods. But you could always recreate it. Making the mini sandwiches would be the easiest part. You probably want to buy the scones and the little cakes and stuff unless you're feeling really adventurous.
Oh, hell no. It'll never happen in a million years. I struggle enough to make a peanut butter and jelly sandwich. There's no way I'm preparing a whole bunch of little sandwiches.
But it did give me a new appreciation for tea that I did not have before. Oh, yeah. I'm going to make a confession. I had never had a proper cup of English breakfast with milk and sugar.
Dude, English breakfast is so good.
It was. It was delicious.
It's
and
like
I
my
now
favorite.
I think of tea completely different. I mean, my inner experience with tea is either like weird loose leaf fruit teas that taste like fruit punch, or it's like Lipton bags.
Yeah. My first cup of English breakfast was on the Virgin train with you. Or not. Was that Virgin? Yeah, the train to Manchester. Mm-hmm. That was really good.
Yeah, for train tea, it was real good.
Yeah.
I was
for
a fan.
Train tea.
I'm not
picky.
Well,
I mean, it's like getting coffee on the airplane, you know?
I know. I just like calling it.
Nice,
I like the idea of train tea.
But yeah, it was really great. Like the food, I mean, we had lots of really good food. Let's talk a little bit about the meetup. So the meetup was super fun. We rented out a private bar in the basement of this place called the Marquee at Westminster, which was not too far from where we were staying over in Mayfair. And the pub was great. The people who ran the pub were so nice. And, Georgie was our bartender downstairs. When we all got together to take the photo, if you guys missed it on social media, there's like a little clip of us all shouting, "Oi, Govna!" I thought he was going to lose his shit because he started laughing so hard.
Oh, no.
He burst out laughing so hard.
Really?
It was great.
Yeah, he was like, oh my God,
these
dumb Americans.
Fucking assholes.
I didn't even think about that. Oh my God, how embarrassing.
Yeah. Georgie judged us a little bit, but that's okay.
He was cool. He was cool about it though. Yeah. He laughed. He laughed pretty hard.
That's amazing.
But they were super nice. We're so grateful for everyone that came out. We took lots of photos and you guys posted so many of them. If you never posted it, please do. We would love to see all of the photos. There was a cute little puppy that came.
Oh. Titan.
Yes.
I was like, I don't want to like claim favorites or anything or, you know, like say who I most appreciated coming, but clearly it was Titan.
Yeah.
It's the safest bet because if we start naming names of all the people we talk to, it would be playing favorites. So yes, pick the dog, of
the
course.
Dog.
But we got some cool presents from you guys. We got some chocolate. We got some custom T-shirts. We got, you know, some handwritten notes and a bunch of other things. And we just are so thankful and grateful for everybody who took the time out on a holiday weekend. We know that there's many ways that you could have spent your time that weekend and you chose to come. And more importantly, it sounds like a bunch of you exchanged details and are still talking and are still friends. And I heard some hot gossip that maybe a couple people are maybe more than friends after the meetup.
Yes.
And I was like, what's this good is game?
Bringing people together.
Ah, that's so fun. Yeah, we received an email from an anonymous source. Anyway, this person, she said that that they were hanging out at the bar till closing time. And by the end, they were covered in Sharpie markers and like sticky notes. And they're just having a great time. And I think that's so, it's really cool that, you know, we can provide a safe space for people to come together and forge friendships. I remember that's how I kind of got my start in the industry when I was a fan of IGN and, you know, Podcast Beyond and Game Scoop, and they would have their events at PAX events, and I would go there and I would meet all my fellow fans of the podcast as well, and we would, you know, link up and hang out, and we still keep in touch to this day. And it's really cool to think that now I'm able to help provide that for other people. Well, we are, obviously, but yeah, it's cool. It's a cool thing.
It was awesome, and we definitely want to come back and throw another meetup and hopefully see a lot of familiar faces and some new faces. I know a bunch of you reached out to us on social media saying that you couldn't make it, and we're bummed that you couldn't, but we hope to come back again someday because London was awesome.
A question.
Yes.
Question?
To all. Okay. So those who are listening who were from the meet and greet / live in London, whatever. Dear Londoners, what the fuck do you do about shit flying into your eyes all of the goddamn time in the summer? I don't understand. When we were there, when we would walk around, it was like without fail, one of us would be like, ow, my eye. Like there was just
like tree particles.
It's like tree
I don't
particles
know.
Are like floating
parts
around.
Of plants
in the atmosphere.
Kept flying at our faces.
And I don't understand like how, what do you do? How do you combat the tree stuff?
Wear glasses, I guess, or sunglasses?
But we wear sunglasses sometimes. It still gets in there.
That's true. I never had that problem. The problem I had with the allergies, those trees with those little like spiky ball things, it's like poofing out the pollen. Oh my God. I felt like my throat.
Yeah,
I
got at least one of those things in my eye at some point.
Yeah. That's what flying said into your eye. It's terrible.
I've never had this happen before, but the allergy reaction I was having was my throat literally felt like it was closing up. And our tour guide said, you know, FYI, your allergies might get real bad. You might feel like you have something in your throat. Oh, yeah, I feel like it was just closing. And then my mom also had it, and then Jason had it, and it was just, it was intense. I've never had allergies like that before in a different spot, but it's the trees.
I didn't have any allergies. I did get things flying into my eye every 5 fucking minutes, but... And, like, what's weird is, again, like, that one trip when I went with my family, Same thing. I remember vividly something flying into my eye when I was, I think it was actually through Hyde Park, which is where we were too. And I was just like, ow, ay. And then I walked around being like, help, help. I need a drugstore. I need a drugstore. Do you know what a drugstore? And everyone looked at me like I was crazy. I mean, granted, I was covering my eye, but. And then eventually someone was like, I'm sorry, do you mean the pharmacy? And I was like, fuck you. Yeah, I need eye drops.
No need to be a dick. You know what she needs.
Yeah. I need help. I need medical attention.
My eye. Do you mean the pharmacy? Get out of here. You know exactly what she
needs.
Where is
Boots? Send me to Boots.
It was a fun trip. Before we talk about like one of the main reasons why we went when we headed up to Manchester, I also want to give a shout out and a thank you to Nolan North and Troy Baker. Simer and I were able to meet up with them one evening for dinner after their MCM duties. So they were having a whole crazy weekend of making appearances at the Comic-Con happening in London while we were there. And so we stole some of their time. And those two are such a riot. If you haven't checked out their show, Retro Replay, highly recommend. And we discussed getting them on the show sometime.
Yes.
We were like, hey guys, you got to come on the show. It'll be fun. So we're going to work with them on some scheduling and see when they can maybe pop by. And I highly anticipate shenanigans ensuing.
Oh my God. Oh yes.
There will be lots.
Yes.
So, but thanks to those guys. They're a ton of fun. And they kept doing these English accents all night. And I was like, do you think people around you think that you're being just like a total dick because you're like making fun of their accent? And then they like wouldn't break character. It was very impressive.
They kind of what they do.
I mean,
right?
They're actors, right? They commit.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so you have to either commit right along with them, or I mean, really, that's the only choice I ever do. I'm just like, all right, we're doing this. I'm not as good as you, but I'll play this game.
See, I can't do accents at all, and so I would get found out as a phony right away.
Oh, girl, neither can
I. Lean into it. Lean into the bad.
Just lean
into the bad. I love that.
Oh my gosh. Okay, let's cap off this show in this segment talking about one of the most epic concerts.
Oh my God.
We've ever been to. So we took the train from London up to Manchester. Had a little bit of a snafu because we planned to take the train back that evening after the concert. Until we discovered that the concert was going to go beyond when our train left and there was only one direct train back to London. Whoops. So we ended up staying overnight in Manchester. Then Steimer and I hopped a 5 a.m. train the next morning.
Yep.
Brutal. So I could get back to take my flight to come home because I had a bunch of EA and E3 prep stuff that I had to do. So we get up to Manchester, the four of us, right up there together, which was a really nice train ride. Brittany drank tea for the first time.
That was very sophisticated.
Oh my God, there was a pony playing with a ball.
Oh my God.
I was so excited.
So this is why this is so important. It's because Steimer was dead to the world. She was checked out. She was like 1 foot in, 1 foot out. And so the whole ride, she's just kind of like existing in this corner. And then like all of a sudden her face lights up, like the rainbow comes out, like birds are singing. She's like, oh my God, it's a pony with a ball. And that was the most excited I literally think I've ever seen her. It was a pony playing with a ball. I didn't see it, but it made your day.
It was just so cute, and it was just frolicking around in this field, and I just thought it was brilliant. It woke me up, that's for sure, because that was one of the nights where I had one of the worst jet lags, where I did not sleep until like 7 a.m. or something. It was bad.
Jeez.
Yeah, the jet lag this trip was particularly brutal. I think it's because this trip was short, and coming from the west coast of the U.S. all the way over to London, it's a particularly brutal time change. But we got there like mid-afternoon to mid-morning. We checked into our last-minute hotel. Thankfully, we were able to find a relatively nice place. And then we were like, okay, let's go procure some food. We tried to hit the Cat Cafe
twice
in Manchester, but apparently everybody had the same idea that we did, and they were all booked.
Yeah, sad day.
They're like, you can wait for an hour if you want. And we were like, nah. I was like, I have two cats at home. I'm good.
I can play with cats anytime I want. I'm okay.
That's when we ended up going to Yard and Coop, which was a really fun restaurant. They had a really cool cocktail list. And then, of course, they had a variety of chicken wings, which we were like, obviously, we got to go check it out. But then the chicken gave us weird meat burps later.
Oh, yeah. Now, the chicken, Steimer, sounds like you were fine.
I was fine. I don't know, which is weird because I ate everything that you ate.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. We were waiting for our Uber to take us to what? I don't know. The concert.
Etihad. Yeah, yeah. The stadium.
And Andrea comes up. She's like, do you have any Tums? And I was like, no. She's like, okay. And then we both like kind of had this mutual understanding that we both were somehow fucked up, because this isn't the first time this has happened where we'll both eat something. Yeah. And then we just kind of like look at each other like, are you hurting right now? Yeah. And then we got the burps. So yeah. Something we ate, but maybe I don't know what happened.
I mean, to be fair, I did take my digestive herbs before I ate.
Oh, see, you cheated. You didn't cheat. You're smart.
You didn't say anything about digestive herbs. Why didn't you share?
Yeah.
I didn't. I honestly thought you'd judge me.
That's a
You're
fair
talking
assumption.
To the queen of digestive issues. I will try anything.
Not you, Brittany. Oh. I thought Andrew would be like, what is that?
I definitely. Well, listen, after having spent time in a hotel with you and seeing your absolutely impressive amount of tinctures that you travel with, I would not. I maybe would have had a tiny bit of judgment, but then would have been like, okay, let me try that stuff out.
Well, yeah, because she was fine. So we were the ones who suffered.
Apparently digestive herbs are the way to go.
They taste ass, but yeah.
But they if the taste is temporary, right?
It is, yeah. It's basically essentially it's just a bunch of herbs that when we're more like crazy types would chew on to digest, but none of those herbs taste good. But the bitterness of it triggers your stomach acid and all that to like kick into gear, so you have an easier time digesting your food.
Yep. This is why you drink bitters, Britt.
It's basically bitters in a spray.
Okay, yeah, because I've tried that before.
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
And I actually have kind of acclimated myself to the flavor of Angostura bitters now, so it's not too terrible. But so we then decide it's time to go to the concert. And BT Dubs, if you live in Northern England, you know that it rains all the time in Manchester, and we were hoping against hope that we were going to get lucky because the weather was really nice around when we were in the UK. But when we were there, we kind of got like sort of lucky, sort of unlucky with weather, because it was really beautiful and sunny in like 70 when we arrived, and then it was beautiful and sunny in 70 when we left.
Yep.
While we were there at the concert specifically, it rained the whole time.
We were covered.
We were covered though. Yeah.
Yes. Thankfully we didn't have to stand in ponchos in the rain like literally like 30,000 other people did. But we our seats were covered, but then we had to make a very long walk after the concert. So the concert was great. It was super fun. They played all of the hits. It was basically like a giant sing-along. I posted a little clip on my Twitter feed. If you guys go back through my media, you should be able to see it. I apologize. You'll have to probably look at a lot of GIFs in order to get there. it was just such a cool experience being able to go. And it was weirdly emotional for me in a lot of ways. I kept feeling like I wanted to cry at certain points.
Yeah.
It kept like tugging at me in a way, like, because I just have so many memories tied to so many of those songs. I don't know. How did you guys feel?
Yeah, for me, I mean, I got my first Spice Girls CD at my 9th or 10th birthday party. My aunt got it for me. And I remember just being instantly hooked. And I know they always talked about like girl power. And a lot, if you listen to a lot of the lyrics of their songs, it's very like pro equality. And, you know, we can dress how we want, not be judged for it. We can have sex with who we want. We don't, you know, like that's not the words they explicitly say, but it's kind of like the tone in some of the messages that they send is that you can do what you want. And you can still be blah, blah, blah. Anyway, you know, that was 10. I didn't quite understand it. And now that I'm an adult, and I use air quotes when I say that, hearing them sing these songs and understanding the messaging and how powerful that is, and to see them being so supportive of all races and genders. And that's like one of the things they opened with. It's like everyone is welcome here. And the pro-positivity messages that they were sending, it was like, yes, like this just means so much more to me now. And like you said also, Andrea, it is a flood of nostalgia. Like, that's what we listened to growing up as little girls. And now here we are, you know, in London, getting to experience this thing as three close friends that, you know, we didn't have that growing up. We weren't friends growing up. And now that we're adults, we can experience it together. And we all share that background. It was just, it was emotional. When they did that little, whatever it was called, intermission thing with the little clips of them talking about, like, how they're friends again, or not friends again, how excited they are to be back, and what it's like for them to be working together again like this, and how they're their sisters. That's when I got super emotional.
That one, yeah. That got to me too, and I'm a cold-hearted bitch. And it was like, like for a lot of it, I wasn't like emotional during the songs. I was stoked about the songs, because obviously I'm like, fuck yes, 14-year-old me, so excited. Like, yeah. I love this. But I think the thing I loved the most was seeing them interact with each other on stage, and the way I was like, yes, you guys. And it felt very familiar, like us. It felt like us, but obviously, you know, way more famous and rich. But because especially like, so it was Mel B's birthday. Mm-hmm. So they wheeled out this giant cake, which we were all, I think initially we all thought was fake, right? Like we were all like,
a cheetah print cake. Yeah.
But then she grabbed a chunk of it and shoved it in her mouth. And I was like, that's a real cake. Okay. And I think my favorite part was like, there was a little cake fight between Mel B and Ginger. And then Sporty was like, I'm not going to do justice to the accent. The accent was what made it.
Yeah.
She's like, you're going to get cake on the costumes, you nutters. And I was like, I just lost my shit. I was laughing so hard because I was like, that is us. That is some bullshit that we would do. One of us would be like, throwing cake at the other, and then one would be the adult being like, what are you doing?
It'd probably be me.
And you're right, Sam, because it did feel so familiar, obviously like us, but also I remember watching them growing up and they were all had their personalities and they all interacted, and it just seems like they've still remained the closest of friends, and their interactions with each other was just so great. I remember Sporty Spice. No. Scary Spice. He was like, yeah, on this day, Ginger, you left, you know, on my birthday. You better not do it again, you fucking bitch. Or she said something like that.
Yeah, she did. Yeah, it was like that. And it was like, ha, 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 yes.
So funny. Ugh, it was so good. Everything about that was great. The costumes. Oh, my God.
The costumes were incredible. Ugh,
the hand-studded, like, crystal costumes. Like, I absolutely understand why their costume designer was like, you have to wear these plastic sheets over your costumes, it's raining, we can't afford to have these things get crazy wet. But I mean, they still did all like all of the moves. There was only one point where a dancer slipped on the stage. Did he slip twice?
It wasn't the same guy, but it was another guy, same outfits, same segment. Okay. Two people slipped.
But it was like, really impressive that they were able to take to do the show in rain the whole time. And it was really cool seeing Mel B interact with the audience because she's from the northern part of the UK.
Leeds.
Right. And so she kept yelling Northerners, and like the whole crowd just kept losing their mind. It was fun. It was a really amazing concert, and it was awesome to get to experience it with you ladies.
Yeah.
And then we went on that crazy trek after the concert was over.
I feel like that was just as cool. I mean, obviously not just as cool as the concert, but it was like a really interesting experience. So after the concert lets out, we're like, okay, there's no way we're going to be able to get a cab out of here. So we're just going to walk a ways out of town and then hopefully get a cab there. Spoiler alert, that didn't happen. We walked the whole fucking way. But we start walking out and we're just in a horde of people, like a sea of people walking. And then the best part was at one point, this car is trying to get out. God bless him. And this guy just starts like singing. Singing and sashaying at the car. And then everyone joins in. And it's this giant horde singing Spice Girls at this car who must be pissing themselves at this point. I don't know. But it was just like,
that was fun.
What is happening? This is amazing.
Yeah, we were all riding the high of the Spice Girls because they ended the show with Wannabe and this awesome like fireworks display, and they all had like reimagined versions of the costumes, and then they took those off, and then they had like the original costumes that they wore in the music video. It was just like a super like cool touch in seeing all the memorabilia and stuff that they wove into the show. So
I still am praying that they expand, they continue to tour, they come to America, we get to go see them again, because I would 100% go see them again.
Heck yeah, immediately. I don't, like, with how fast they sold tickets in the UK, like, I'm just shocked that they wouldn't even consider coming to the States.
Make that money, honeys.
We would welcome them with open arms. Come to America.
Or just do a very short Vegas residency. Okay, bye.
Yep.
Oh my God.
Pull like a Lady Gaga, right?
Yeah.
Exactly. Oh man, so good. Well, thanks for listening, everybody. We hope that you enjoyed our trip down memory lane from our London adventures. It was a ton of fun, and as I mentioned, we would love to come back someday in the not too distant future. But for now, our next meetup on the horizon again is in Los Angeles next week. So please come down to LA Live again. All of the details will be on all of our social channels. So keep an eye out for that. And then beyond that, we will be at PAX West later in the summer in Seattle. I've already got some really cool stuff cooking for PAX West, you guys. It's going to be amazing. If you've come to our PAX West meetups before, trust me, you won't be disappointed with this year. So it's going to be great. These girls don't even know because I haven't told them yet.
Secrets. Ooh, secrets. We're just smiling like we know.
We're like, it's going to be so good. We have no idea.
Maybe not.
But I'm sure it will be because we trust you.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate that. Just show up and have a good time. That's all I ask.
I'm you know, that's done and done.
Excellent. See? It's easy. All right. Well, listen, we hope we see you guys in LA. Keep an eye out for all of the stuff we're doing at E3. We're super excited for our E3 special episode. Once again, a big thank you to all of our Patreon supporters, our Patreon producers. Welcome to the people who are new to our community. Patreon.com/whatsgoodgames is how you support everything that we do here and make sure that we can keep the lights on and can keep making content for you. So have a fantastic weekend. Hope you get to play some games and we'll see you soon. Bye, everybody.